Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, it's hour number four of the Nation, and we do have a big 5 o'clock hour in store here for you. The Hockey Hawk, Gavin Spittle, an NHL expert, Stars season ticket holder, is going to join us here in just a minute to talk about tonight's big game four and how the Stars can tie this series up. And then one of the most recognizable names in NFL sports media history, John Clayton, the professor, is going to join us, longtime ESPN senior writer, and now he is a talk show host in Seattle, and he covers the Seahawks very, very closely, so he'll tell us what he thinks about Cowboys Seahawks. That's coming up in about 5 minutes. We're going to do another round of predictions as well, and we'll tell you why Brian Broaddus actually thinks the Cowboys are going to go up there and beat Seattle. That's not a common prediction here this week, as the Hawks are 4.5-point favorites. But joining us now is our program director and Hockey Hawk, Gavin Spittle. How the heck you doing right now, boss?
Here we go, boys. Here we go.
2 hours until the puck drops.
Yeah, man.
What are you thinking right now? What's your confidence level like?
I've already done my pregame skate, and I'm ready.
Are you fit to play?
I am fit to play, and I like what Gavin said, because my confidence meter was down. But as this day has moved along, my confidence meter is increasing. I love what John Klingberg's had to say. We're going to win this game. I love the stepping up that leader in the room. To me, that just like, I was so excited to hear that from Klingberg, who is a very underrated player. Heiskanen's getting the credit, but John Klingberg, to me, is the key to this defensive core.
Oh, I love it. That's strong analysis right out of the gates here. How about the Steven Stamkos news? How significant is that?
I think it's significant from an energy level of Tampa. They've done it without him. They're used to it. But him not being on that bench, I think, helps the Stars. You know, he looked so good for just such a limited basis, and he just provided that spark. So I'm okay with Stamkos sitting. Even a 50% Steven Stamkos. Remember, during the year, he had 16, even with the injury that happened on February 25th, he had 16 more points than the Stars' leading point getter, which is Tyler Seguin.
Wow, that's very impressive. Okay, what do you think about the Ben Bishop storyline here? Is there a case to be made that 42 days past injury, maybe there is a legitimate chance we could see him appear?
I think there's a case to be made based on his playoff history and how good he has been and how he has put teams on his shoulder. He went in when he was with the Lightning. He went into Madison Square Garden, a game 7 against the New York Rangers, and shut them down. Look what he did against the St. Louis Blues last year in that game 7. They wouldn't have been in that game if it wasn't for Ben Bishop. So the case is to be made, and I also believe he's a team leader and he wants to help the team. That being said, I think you need to go with Khudobin, stick with Khudobin, and if Khudobin can keep it to 2 or 3, I think he has to play tomorrow night. It's Frank Provenzano brought it up best. Not only do you have to tell Khudobin that he'll be sitting down, but then you also have to address the team and say that this guy that has basically brought you to the cup is not playing tonight by choice.
Okay, morning skate. What do you tell the boys? What do you work on? Is there something that you can magically find this morning in practice that can help you tonight?
Absolutely. We have to reverse the ice tonight. We have to spend less time in our zone, more time in their zone. We have to take advantage of when Victor Hedman, their top defenseman, and the top defenseman basically in the league, is off the ice. When he's on the ice, Tampa either scores, but they don't allow people to score on him. So when Hedman's off the ice, you need to take advantage of that, because remember, you have the last line change tonight. You're the home team, and that's a big deal, because you can get your line on the ice that's most effective, especially on a face-off draw. So Victor Hedman plays a lot of minutes, so you have to take advantage of that. But what they are doing to you is they're crunching on Haskinen. They're crunching on Klingberg. They're forcing them to release the puck early, which is causing turnovers. You have to do that to their defensemen, and you have to go on the up because this playing back can only go so far against Tampa.
Yeah, but has the fourth line been compromised now because of injury?
Yes, I think that's a great point. I think the loss of Foxa and the loss of Como, who's a game-time decision tonight. Foxa will not play. He's unfit. But Como's game time. That's one of your best checkers.
Right.
That's one of your best penalty killers. So he does a lot of those things on the ice that don't show up on the stat sheet. So certainly hurts. But, you know, we're up at that next man up mentality at this point. This is the Stanley Cup. They're playing without their best player. So...
Ooh. Anything else before we let you go, boss?
Heck yeah.
What do you got?
We need to change this. Okay. Why are we looking at this as possibly going down 3-1? We should be looking at this game tonight to tie it up at 2. Gentlemen, okay. Win tonight. And we're even at 2. We were underdogs against Calgary. Nobody thought you could beat Colorado. And Vegas? Vegas was going to sweep us, supposedly? And a one-game deficit? That's supposed to phase us? You don't want a piece of us, Tampa. Enjoy your game lead, because tonight, we're taking control. If you're a Tampa fan here in DFW, you want to drop the mitts? Find the Hockey Hawk. I'm ready. I am ready to fight you. These talons are ready. Tonight, Tyler Seguin, your goal drought ends. Tonight, you, Tampa Bay, get angry Jamie Benn. Alexander Radulov, to you I say, Igrat Umno, which in Russian means play smart. Or I just swore in Russian and we're all going to get fired. But it comes down to science, gentlemen.
Okay.
A lightning bolt is powerful, but a star controls its own universe. Guess what, Tampa? As the great Anton Khudobin says, we're not going home!
Love it.
The strongest appearance in Hockey Hawk history just happened. Drop the mic and get the hell out of here, boss man, and have a great weekend. Go Stars. That was amazing,
that
dude.
That was good. That was good.
I swear, our boss is going to go straight from being a program director to the most entertaining hockey analyst in American sports.
Yeah.
That was incredible. Here we go now. Joining us now on an incredible, not only Football Friday, but Stanley Cup Final Friday, is one of the most recognizable names in the NFL, John Clayton, veteran reporter, longtime writer for ESPN, joining us here on your home of the Cowboys. And a good afternoon to you, John. How you doing?
Good afternoon to you guys. Looking forward to this weekend's game?
Yeah. Oh, and some. Yeah. How about you?
Do you think it's going to have an NBA type of scoring? Because I was just looking at this. The over and under is like 55.5 points. 55. And then you look at the defenses of both teams right now, the injuries and the problems with Dallas, the lack of a pass rush right now with Seattle. I mean, what do you think? Would this be like a game where you have two teams getting close to 40 points? Gee, I know that wouldn't happen in any Dallas game, but you know, I think so.
Well, you know, we're pretty confident Russell Wilson's going to have success against the Cowboys defense. My first question for you is, how bad is this Seahawks defense? Some of the numbers look rough here after two games. Can the Cowboys count on a soft defense Sunday afternoon?
They can count on getting points, but see, here's where the difference is, because I think a lot of people, you know, particularly with Russell Wilson playing the way that he is, think that the Seahawks might be the number one seed in the NFC. Now, maybe with the problems that they have on defense, that may be adventurous. But when you look in the big picture, where I know like the Cowboys have only had the lead in like 9 minutes and 39 seconds of the first 120 minutes, you look and see, with all the points and yards allowed, Seattle's had a double-digit lead in the second half of each of the first two games, and that's going up against Cam Newton playing at his best and Matt Ryan, who usually plays very well. And so what you can look at is like, okay, it looks bad, but they gave up a lot of meaningless yards. Now, again, when you're giving up more yards than anybody else in recent NFL history, that's not good. But a lot of it was kind of garbage time, except when that last drive started for the Patriots and Cam Newton got him to the 1 yard line. So it's still a matter that until they can get some pass rush, and right now they're in bad shape there because there's very few pass rushing defensive ends left because of injuries and everything else. They lost Bruce Irvin. You know, they have Rasheen Green went on IR today. You know, they don't know if Benson Mayoa is going to be able to play because he has a groin injury. So they're very thin there, but they do blitz more. And Jamal Adams is just an incredible talent who's able to get pressure on the quarterback and pressure on everything.
Yeah, John, a lot of focus there on that Seahawk defense. But you mentioned what with Russell Wilson and all, but what's gotten into Brian Schottenheimer? We've gotten so used to him playing like football in a phone booth where it's just, you know, let's bang this thing straight ahead. Is there something that clicked with him? Did he go back and has he talked about, hey, went back and studied? Or is this just something that he knows he has to involve as a play caller?
Well, he's still evolving, but it was funny. In the first two games he was the offensive coordinator, he got himself in trouble with Pete Carroll because they played at Denver, they played at Chicago, they lost both games, and they passed the ball more than ran it. And Pete calls him into the office and says, what are we doing wrong here? It's like, why are we doing this? And Brian says, I never had a quarterback as good as this. This is the best quarterback I've ever been, and so I like to give him the opportunity to pass. He says, no, let's go back to the running game. And so they, and of course, this was the first year they had redone the offensive line. They had Mike Solari as coach, and so as the offensive line coach, and so they were trying to establish something early with run, pass. All right, so then what's happened last year? It was run, pass, but they were trailing a lot of games at halftime. This year there was a big campaign by even Russell Wilson to let Russ cook. And so Brian took that to heart, opened things up a little bit, threw more passes on first and second down, let him up the tempo, because one thing you know Russell can do is come back in the fourth quarter. But what they're letting him do is carry the game from the first quarter on, and he's cooked to the point where, you know, he's completing 82% of his passes, best in NFL history in the first two games, 9 yards an attempt, and has 9 touchdown passes.
Wow. The Professor John Clayton here with you on 105 Through the Fan, host on 710 ESPN Seattle Monday through Friday from 10 to noon. So do you think this keeps going? Are the returns, is Russell Wilson going to put up MVP numbers? What kind of a future does the Seahawks season have if it continues to unfold like this?
Yeah, the way it's shaping up right now, it looks like he's going to be able to continue this, because you look at this and, you know, it's maybe not there yet, but this might be the most talented offense that he's had, because, you know, first off, you look at the fact that, you know, Tyler Lockett has been a Pro Bowl alternate that now is, you know, considered to be one of the top 100 players in the league. DK Metcalf is an absolute beast, and he's one of the fast-rising stars in the league. I mean, how good is he? Last week, and again, he's 6'3", 229, runs 4.33 in the 40. He went up against the Defensive Player of the Year, Stephon Gilmore, and they got into a physical battle on every play. He ended up catching 5 passes for 92 yards and a 38-yard touchdown. So David Moore's emerged as a pretty decent third receiver, and then they're using more 2 tight end sets, which makes them less predictable, and they're doing it with Greg Olsen and Will Disley, and they've gone from an 11% two tight end team to a 31% two tight end team, and that gives them the ability to have bigger bodies going against smaller bodies, and gets the running game going and gets the unpredictable fashion whether Russ is going to pass or run.
John, you've seen the Seahawks teams play forever, but if you had to say, what's Dallas's defensive game plan going in? You know, how do you stop Russell Wilson? I have my ideas. I've been talking about making him play backwards in this game. Now let him attack the line. I'm just curious of how you would say, if you're Dallas, how would you try and stop him?
The one thing that, what I thought was interesting last week with the Patriots is that, they have the best 3 cornerback coverage man-to-man guys in football. Okay, so they stayed nickel the entire game, but when Seahawks went 2 tight ends, you know, the Seahawks were able to get 154 yards rushing. So what I wouldn't do is go more nickel. I think you go more base defense to try to do it that way. I don't know if it's the right idea to keep, you know, going back and forth between a 4-3 and a 3-4, particularly knowing that, DeMarcus Lawrence and Everson Griffin aren't totally comfortable, you know, coming out of the non-3-point stance. So you got to get pressure on him and then occasionally make a blitz, but don't do too much man, because one of the things that happened, and it happened last week, when you go man, then two things can happen. Russell knows he can catch that, and he can run the football, or he can try a long pass downfield, which is probably the best long pass guy in football. So I guess the biggest thing to do is that don't make it too complicated. Try to use the athletic ability of this defense to try to get to Russell Wilson and also to try to stop the run.
Cowboys have been struggling to stop the run situationally. It sounds like the Seahawks running game is still very potent, even though they're not emphasizing it as much as they have in the past, John.
Well, what it was in the first game, you know, and listen, you just watched that last week. Do you think the Falcons have problems on defense? I mean, you know, I'm just amazed at Isaiah Oliver, who gave up 62.5% completions last year, was still starting. And so he starts, and of course, they're breaking in A.J. Terrell, who I think is going to be pretty good, but he's not there yet. And so what they did in week one is realizing there's going to be problems at the cornerback position. They just decided to go more up-tempo, pass the ball more on first and second down. And, you know, Russell Wilson completed 88.3% of his passes. So they had 38 pass attempts with, you know, got dropbacks, 35 pass attempts, and only 20 runs. Well, in this game against the Patriots, you know, they decided, okay, fine. They're going to stay nickel the entire time. Let's run the ball more. So they had 30 runs and 28 dropbacks on the pass. So they're going to vary it each week to what they think they can do against the defense they're playing against. And so I think right now, don't make it too complicated, because if you do, then he's going to be the one picking up on things and, you know, hitting a play action pass or hitting something with DK Metcalf, just trying to overpower somebody.
John, the stadium there is legendary for sound and the crowd. And with the fact with no crowd, and I assume you went to the game, the New England game, how is the pumped-in sound? Is it very similar, or are the Cowboys going to have communication problems in this game because of the pumped-in crowd noise?
Well, the weird part is, you know, I'm on the Seahawks broadcast, and I do the opposing team sidelines. But for the all season, I'm doing the sidelines, particularly on the Cowboy game, from home. Because you know, it's just there's no sideline reporting or anything like that, and there's very limited access. But so I couldn't judge the crowd noise. But again, I'm sure it's the 70 decibels. But it hurts. And again, I think this is a league-wide thing. I think it's one of the reasons right now, and of course, it affects Seattle more than any team else, because they usually have like a 5-point advantage when they have crowd noise. Well, you don't have the false starts, because they usually get a false start or two each game with crowd noise. Some of the big stops are helped by the crowd, and that's not going to happen. And so it is a deficit that allows things to go. But that's one of the reasons I also think, because, you know, the defense has a better chance to pick up on the signals, because again, you know, you can hear everything. And so that doesn't help the offense. I mean, doesn't help the defense. But overall, that's why scoring was at a record level in the first 2 weeks. 1611 for points. You know, 25.15 points a game. It was record levels for touchdowns. And I think the other thing that's not being talked about enough: the officials aren't calling penalties as much. You know, they're down to, it was like 179 penalties, which, going back to the merger, that was the lowest in the first 2 weeks of the season. So that helps the offense, because I know charting, if you take a crew and see how they do as far as the number of penalties and holding penalties, the more they call, the lower the score. The less they call, the higher the score.
Great stuff, John. It's amazing to hear you talk football, and it's an honor to have you on our show. Rock on, buddy.
And my pleasure.
Yes, sir. There he goes, John Clayton, the professor. Yes, Seahawks sideline reporter, hosts 10 to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle. If you want to check out John, that's when SportsCenter was the best to me, when he was appearing, you know, on his little satellite hits, and he'd break down the games and give you all the numbers like that. That was the golden era of SportsCenter, right?
Amazing
there, when John
guy.
Clayton was
amazing,
killing.
Amazing, yeah. I always saw him at the combine. I always enjoyed kind of bumping into him and picking his brain when you could.
So cool, yeah. NFL royalty, there he goes. There he goes. Professor John Clayton. Voice of the Rangers, Eric Nadel, joins us to talk about them wrapping up their season next in the G-Bag Nation. Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. It's time for the Eric Nadel Show here on The Fan. The world of sports and DFW still standing in awe of the Gavin Spittle Dallas Stars pep talk he delivered 19 minutes ago right here. You can go back with the radio.com app and take a listen to that. I'm sure you'll be hearing it next week there in the G-Bag of the Day, daily at 2:30 right here on The Fan. But, yeah, it's a big game tonight, Game 4. So we have a Stanley Cup Final and a Football Friday show cooking for you. And it's a big weekend for the Rangers as well with their season wrapping up. Let's talk with your voice of the Rangers, Eric Nadel. Segment is brought to you by My Computer Career, and it's brought to you by Rubin & Associates. If you're drowning in debt, call our guy Mark Rubin at 1-800-LAWYERS. Mark will talk to you personally. Take control of your debt, eliminate your stress, and allow you to live life again. Starts with a simple confidential phone call to Mark Rubin at 1-800-LAWYERS. And a good afternoon, Eric. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Oh, we're doing great. Are you fired up for this game four tonight?
Very excited. I need two more eyes to be able to. Actually, I need to probably four more because I'm also watching out-of-town scores with playoff positions up for grabs and that sort of thing. The National League wildcard picture is total mayhem right now.
Yes, it's all very interesting. What do you think about the Stars? Do they have another comeback in store for us here in this magical playoff run?
I wouldn't
run?
Count them out. I think that, they definitely had an off game last game, but I would think that there's a lot more in the tank.
Eric, I'm going to ask you a question real quick. When you used to broadcast those games in hockey at Fair Park, where did you broadcast from?
That's a good question because the broadcast booth, the press box, is on the end.
Yeah, by the TP Club area?
It's the opposite end.
Okay.
From the TP Club.
Okay.
And it's a fantastic view if they're shooting at the goal right under you. When the puck's on the other end of the ice, it's brutal. You really can't see. And the worst thing in the world is when the other team is coming at you, you can't see their numbers.
Okay.
How are you going to recognize them?
Yeah.
How do you identify
exactly.
The players? No, your own players you can recognize because you've seen them so much. And in that rink, you're pretty low down. You can recognize them by their hair coming out from the helmet or facially. When I was doing games, actually, not all the players wore helmets. There were still some guys who didn't. Randy Carlyle was one, the
sure.
guy who went on to coach for a long time in the NHL and still is. And you knew who was a left-handed shot and who was a right-handed shot. But on the other team, you had a really hard time when those guys were coming at you.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you, okay, have you had to dodge more pucks or more foul balls in your career?
Well, the pucks were much more dangerous up
yeah,
there.
Yeah, up did there.
We did have plexiglass. We had a okay. low plexiglass thing there that we could duck down under. But you still had to be careful. The puck could hit the back wall and come back and hit you, and that did happen a couple of times.
Mm. Eric Nadel here, brought to you by Acme Brick, building North Texas for nearly 130 years. So then with your third set of eyes, the playoff positioning there on the out-of-town scoreboard, is that something that's still really just personally interesting to you to see how these things play out, or you're trying to interject those into the broadcast?
It's a combination. Mostly I'm just curious really as a baseball fan. You know,
yeah.
And, you know, I have close friends who were the announcers, particularly for the Phillies, where Scott Fransky's the announcer. He used to be our Jared Sandler before he went to the Phillies. Mm. You know, he's a kid who grew up here, and he went to SMU. I'd love to see the Phillies do well. I'm a lifelong Mets fan. They've pretty much dropped out of it. But then you've got that scramble between St. Louis, Cincinnati, and Milwaukee. And anytime anybody can knock the Cardinals out of anything, I'm all for it.
Okay.
You're doing good right now. I see it's 3-0 here in the top of the fifth. So we're good.
You know, so we're keeping an eye on that as well. And I have a lot of interest in the Giants. John Miller, the voice of the Giants, is one of my best friends. So I'd like to see the Giants do well.
And Eric, I asked JD this question yesterday, and you've seen all the teams you've seen the Dodgers, the Padres, the A's, and then Houston. How would you handicap those teams as going forward for their playoff chances?
The Dodgers have no weakness as far as I can tell. They are just an unbelievably powerful team. I would make them, prohibitive favorites. Of course, in baseball, the prohibitive favorite frequently doesn't win. But to me, they're kind of in a different category from all of the other teams that we have seen. San Diego looked really good. Obviously, they took all four games from the Rangers. Oakland is very solid. The Rangers always have a hard time with them, too. But I think the Dodgers are a better club than both of those teams.
It's Eric Nadel here with us on The Fan. Would it be fair to say the Rangers are kind of tanking without saying they're tanking? Or how do you describe what's happened here this month?
Well, they're playing young players, but they don't really have a whole lot of alternatives. You know, when you look at Elvis being hurt and Chu being hurt and Danny Santana being hurt, and they've traded away Chirinos and Frazier, you know, that's five of the key nine position players. They don't have a veteran player anymore. So they really have put themselves in a situation where, you know, they're playing the most talented guys at each position, even though in a lot of cases they're guys who really don't have the necessary experience to be consistently effective in the major leagues. So, you know, it's kind of developed into something of a tryout camp, showcase, and a chance for these guys to actually play games this year. You know, and that's the thing we don't want to lose sight of. With no minor league season, you know, there was no way for these guys to get any real competition other than in major league games. And, you know, I think the Rangers wound up in that spot, and it's been fun to watch these young guys. But we've also seen the difference between minor league players and major league players, you know, in what's happened over the last few weeks.
Eric, I'm going to put you on the spot here, but and this is a game that Gavin would play with you probably, but if 2020 baseball season was a song title, what would it be? What would the title of this album be for your experience in what's happened in 2020 baseball season?
Help. One of my favorite Beatles songs.
I like that.
That's a great answer. And as we do every week here with Eric Nadel, we ask him for his favorite musical act, band, maybe song from the city or region that the Rangers opponent hails from. So we're heading on down to Houston. Eric, how's it looking from your perspective?
Well, they've got a lot of them. You know, I start with when I was a kid, Archie Bell and the Drells, you know, do the Tighten Up. They even said in the song that they're from Houston, Texas. But you've got ZZ Top.
There you go.
Perennial favorite. I am a huge Beyonce fan, starting with Destiny's Child. I loved Destiny's Child. I actually like Destiny's Child more than Beyonce solo. But that's fantastic. But if I only had to pick one, I'd go with the eclectic, funky choice, Robert Earl Keen.
Oh, there you go.
The guy who plays country music for people who don't like country music.
If Jeff were here right now, he'd be jumping up and down. He's a big Robert Earl Keen fan.
Oh, yeah, loves him.
All right.
What's your favorite Beyonce song?
Oh, I don't know if I could pick one.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've never seen her live. It's one of the acts I'm determined to see, and I haven't had a chance. Beyonce and Stevie Wonder, I think, are probably the top two on my list. And Stevie hardly ever plays anymore. He just plays a few concerts a year, and they're usually like at a racetrack in some big festival or something like that. You know, not necessarily the kind of venues I want to go to, but I will see both Stevie and Beyonce one day.
I'd tag along for either one of those shows if you'd have me, Eric.
Come on.
All right.
We'll put on some masks and go.
We might have to wait a while. What is the what's the biggest decision coming up this offseason for this ball club?
Oh, that's a really good decision, really good question. I think it has to do with the middle infielders. You know, are they going to give Odor and Elvis another chance as starting players? Or if not, what are the alternatives? You know, chances are Anderson Tejeda is not ready to be a big league player, but he is probably the future player at one of those two positions. You know, is Isaiah Kiner-Falefa the future player at one of those two positions, given that Josh Jung is a third baseman and you would think would be up in the big leagues by the end of next year? Or do the Rangers go and try and get a stopgap in the meantime, or let Rugi and Elvis be the stopgaps? I think that's probably, in terms of the actual lineup, the biggest decision they have to make. But they've got some big decisions to make with regard to their pitching too. You know, they've got three veterans coming back if they don't trade Lynn, and that's a huge decision too. Do you trade Lance Lynn? You certainly entertain offers, and then, you know, you see what you're offered. But with Gibson and Lyles and Lynn, you know, what do you do with the other two spots? Do you just let the young guys fight it out in spring training, you know, and let two of them occupy those spots? Chances are you do, because I don't imagine the Rangers are going to go sign the sort of impact players that are going to vault them up, you know, into championship contention next year.
Yeah, Eric, with all the young players, you know, getting opportunity, are we going to look back on this a couple years from now and say, man, that's actually the best thing that could have happened, that all those guys got experience to be at the major league level, and maybe it helped them with their growth? Or is this going to be like, no, Brian, they're just too far away. They need more pieces to this thing.
No, I think we are going to look back on it that way, particularly in the case of Leody Taveras, you know, where he'll probably be the starting center fielder next year. That would never have happened, I don't think, you know, had we had a normal season. And in the case of a guy like Kyle Cody, who normally would not have had a chance to pitch in the big leagues this year, he could wind up in the Ranger rotation next year, and, you know, maybe he's ready for that. So I think you're right. I think that is how we will ultimately look at the season. And it also depends a lot on who the Rangers take with that number two draft, which is what they're probably going to wind up with. You know, of course, they could still slide under the Pirates, but it's unlikely. The Rangers probably would have to lose all three, and the Pirates would have to win two out of three from the Indians. Not likely to happen, but not impossible. So chances are they have the number two pick, and what they do with that number two pick will have a lot to do with how we look back on this second worst in the major leagues finish. Mm.
What you got going on this winter? Are you heading to Havana or something like that?
Well, right now it's all closed down. You know, normally I go there in February, watch some baseball, visit with my friends there. I don't think that's going to be possible. I don't know. I'll spend some time in Colorado starting next weekend. Hopefully get there while the leaves are still turning in Durango. Spend some time there until the weather gets cold and snowy, and then I'll come back here and see where we are. You know, my birthday benefit concert, which was to have been in May, is tentatively scheduled now for December 3rd at the Kessler for Focus on Teens. Whether or not that's going to happen, you know, we don't know. I certainly hope so. And hopefully around then we'll start doing the Sunday supper concerts at Cafe Momentum that we did for 2.5 years until the pandemic shut things down. So hopefully we'll be back doing that sometime this offseason.
Yes, sir. All right. Well, we wish we had another 100 games or so, but it was great having you. Awesome season, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Cool. Holler at me anytime.
Yes, sir. There he goes. The great Eric Nadell here on your home of the Rangers. A first pitch tonight at 7 o'clock, pregame at 6:30, and then two more games over the weekend against those Astros. And that'll be a wrap. Yeah, I think Drunken Love or Bootylicious, my favorite Beyonce songs of all time.
Me, Myself, and I, she has never made a better song than that, in my opinion.
Okay.
Me, all Myself,
right.
And I.
Woo! All right. Was that a hit? Was that a hit?
I can't believe that to sing. I can't sing, but yeah.
Oh, yes.
It's a beautiful song.
Oh, that one is good.
The video is awesome. She has lingerie on the video.
There's so many of them.
Yeah.
All right, it is the G-Bag Nation on 105.3. The Fan coming up next. It's time for Jeff's unnamed segment of the day. Kavanaugh's out, so we'll do our best guess on what he would discuss if he was here. Okay, it is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3. The Fan. Jeff is out today. It is time for his unnamed segment of the day. I know he would be getting fired up right now for the Dallas Stars game coming up in an hour and 20 minutes or so. If you missed it, about 40 minutes ago, the Hockey Hawk, Gavin Spittle, joined us, our boss, and he gave a pep talk for the Stars and their fans to help you believe and reframe what we're talking about right here with this opportunity in Game 4 tonight, and we'll play that for you here coming up in just a second. One of the really cool things going on right now around these Stars, though, is these watch parties down there at the AAC. And, you know, it's one of those deals where, you know, they're having to space it out and everything, but they're giving Stars fans the ability to go experience some of that group vibe, some of that energy. And about 4,000 fans per game are getting in there. And, you know, I think one of the great things is there hasn't been any mass spreading events. You know, it's not like they're spreading the coronavirus. They're showing once again that inside sports can be done. Maybe you have to be a little bit more careful. But I just think it's so awesome. I saw our buddies Tovash and Walt on social media going to them. And, boy, when you step inside that barn, it is an NHL town. I know you don't think of DFW as Hockey City or whatever, but there's a lot of people here that are very passionate and knowledgeable about hockey, and it's great to see them be able to get together, and I salute the Stars for making that happen for them.
Yeah, and you know, I'll tell you what, I could go back to the days of Reunion Arena, and you know, when the team was playing and battling, you know, 20 years ago. I mean, it was an incredible scene there. And you know, we're one of those cities a little bit like Atlanta. We had the transient people, you know, that people might not be from here. I mean, I feel very fortunate. I'm from Dallas, Texas, but there's a lot of people that aren't. Maybe they're from a Michigan. You know, John Machota, I know, is from Michigan, you know, and so you got a lot of folks that live here now that do know hockey, do like hockey. You know, maybe they've adopted the Stars. Maybe they grew up in Detroit, Michigan. And, like, and you know, that's probably a bad example. If you're a Detroit, you're probably a Red Wings fan. But, you know, if you every time you go to
hockey's in your blood, though.
It's in your blood. And and you know, if the Red Wings are your favorite team, well, maybe the second favorite team is the Dallas Stars. If you go out there and you'll pull for them. So, you know, tip of the cap to the Stars. It's been a heck of a run. I mean, I just hope it keeps going. You know, I mean, it's been so difficult in this bubble situation for those players, for those coaches, for the trainers, the front office, all those people. You know, you just like to see them be rewarded for all that effort and sacrifice they made to get it to this point.
It's been a majestic Cinderella type of ride, and I, you know, you can't rule them out from making it happen again tonight. You know, you're talking about guys that were from maybe hockey towns that transplanted to DFW, and our boss, Gavin Spittle, one of them, grew up a big Boston Bruins fan.
Right.
And he moved to DFW probably 15 or 20 years ago, but eventually he became a Stars fan. And, you know, then he became a Stars season ticket holder, an Epic fan, and we have him on when there's massive Stars news to sort of break it down for us. He's a hell of an asset and apparently a very talented broadcaster, because out of nowhere, at the end of this interview back there at the top of the hour, I think Spittle might have just won G-Bag of the Year with an epic pep talk, especially if the Stars go on to win this one. Here he was, at GJ Spittle on Twitter, the Hockey Hawk. Ooh. Anything else before we let you go, boss?
Heck yeah.
What do you got?
We need to change this. Okay. Why are we looking at this as possibly going down 3-1? We should be looking at this game tonight to tie it up at 2. Gentlemen, win tonight. And we're even at 2. We were underdogs against Calgary. Nobody thought you could beat Colorado. And Vegas? Vegas was going to sweep us, supposedly? And a one-game deficit? That's supposed to phase us? You don't want a piece of us, Tampa. Enjoy your game lead, because tonight, we're taking control. If you're a Tampa fan here in DFW, you want to drop the mitts? Find the Hockey Hawk. I'm ready. I am ready to fight you. These talons are ready. Tonight, Tyler Seguin, your goal drought ends. Tonight, you Tampa Bay, get angry Jamie Benn. Alexander Radulov, to you I say, Igrat Umno, which in Russian means play smart. Or I just swore in Russian and we're all going to get fired. But it comes down to science, gentlemen.
Okay.
A lightning bolt is powerful, but a star controls its own universe. Guess what, Tampa? As the great Anton Hudobin says, we're not going home! Love it.
The strongest appearance in Hockey Hawk history just happened. Drop the mic and get the hell out of here, boss man, and have a great weekend. That was fun, man. And I tell you what, that got my attention. He pulled that off. It built to a crescendo. He had the perfect punchline to end it. Quality broadcasting, man. And I thought when you become a PD, it's because you failed at broadcasting.
Wow.
I really did.
Wow. You should have kept that thought inside, dog.
Oh, man. Couldn't hack it. Yeah, couldn't hack it. But Spittle just dunked all over that idea. I'm just being real with you.
Wow.
I thought PDs, you know, they wanted to be on air but couldn't hack it.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow, yeah. Dawson. Spittle, all right, might be for the Dawson, best. For Broad himself, for Lucius.
Yeah, should I have
too late to get back to DallasCowboys.com?
Is that a 45-second dump?
Yeah, it's a wrap. It's a wrap.
No, but I'm saying Spittle surprised me in that regard, and now I recognize it. And I do believe, I hope he doesn't leave us, because he is an incredible boss. Okay, Jeff would also want a little college football in here, because you know he gets geeked up about college football. Big 12 schedule is underway. There's 5 games. Brian took us through the top 25 earlier, and you know, there's some crossover here. But, you know, Jeff would want even more college football.
Oh, sure he would, yeah.
2:30 in Lubbock, the Red Raiders 19-point dogs, perhaps appropriate considering the Longhorns won last year's game 49-24. Tom Herman has been there. This is his 4th year. He's never started 2-0, Brian. Will this be the year he finally gets some real success going? Not that beating Tech would, you know, be that, but I mean, they do have a pretty good defense. They have a veteran quarterback, right? The pieces are in place. Yeah, Tom Herman has no excuse now.
No, he doesn't have an excuse. And I think there's a lot of those Texas X's you know, around the state, around the country that are ready for to see their investment, bear fruit. They had a run where they were in the Sugar Bowl 1 year and, you know, it had some success. We talked about, is this the building block that going forward? And then they stumble the next year. So Texas needs to develop some consistency. And Tom Herman, I feel like, needs to do it right now.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. Maybe one more year after this.
Yeah, you're not.
I know a lot of people believed in him. He probably still has some people believing.
Sure.
But you can't go on much longer.
No, 8-5, that doesn't get it done. Playing at the Alamo Bowl, nothing against the Alamo Bowl, but that didn't get it done around here.
I'm looking forward to watching this quarterback, Alan Bowman, for the Raiders. 10th-ranked A&M, a 31-point favorite hosting Vandy. SEC media submitted virtual ballots for their preseason picks. A&M was picked to finish 4th in the SEC West behind Bama, LSU, and Auburn. The Aggies did get 2 first-place votes. 2 of the 96. So they got some believers in there talking Cinderella. Another story for them, though, linebacker Anthony Hines opting out. A family member had died of COVID. He also cited racism as a reason he wants to sit out the 2020 football season. The Plano East Star was the second leading tackler on the team last season. And he's among, I believe, 3 Aggies contributors who are sitting the year out.
I tell you what, I would pick LSU to finish behind the other 3. I would flip that order. I don't think LSU is going to be as strong. They've had so many players that have opted out and for reasons of trying to further their NFL careers and getting ready for that. And so, yeah, I'm enjoying the national championship from last year. It was a heck of a run. But I think that LSU is going to struggle this year with the schedule and then, you know, with the better teams. Texas A&M is one of those better teams.
It happens, you know. It's a good conference.
Yep.
TCU home dog against Iowa State. Cyclone's a good program now somehow. OK State, 6.5-point favorite against West Virginia.
Need to play better, man. They looked so bad against Tulsa last week, though. That was tough.
Baylor expected to whoop Kansas. 17.5-point favorites there.
Yeah.
So that's a look at the Big 12. Enjoy. OU, K-State. Any threat you think for the Sooners?
Well,
it's 27.5.
Yeah, I think Kansas State is they're going into an area that they don't, even though they won the game last year. This is a big time revenge game for Oklahoma. I think they're going to put it on Kansas State pretty strong tomorrow.
Okay, it is time for the C note, the Cowboys news of the evening, and a quote from Mike McCarthy today that I absolutely love. We'll tell you why next in the Nation.